Welcome, everyone, to Just Press Start here at justpressstart.net. I am very pleased to have with me this evening Mr. Stephen Reed from Gazillion, talking about Marvel Heroes. Stephen, thank you so very much for coming on the program.
No problem at all.
So before we get into the game itself, why don't you tell people a little bit about your background, which is very interesting from what I've been reading. So just give people a bit of an idea about what it is you do and how you've kind of gotten where you are.
Well, I'm not sure which part you might find interesting, but so yeah, I'm director of community and customer support here at Gazillion, and my background is mostly in community. I've done stints in managing customer support teams as well. Immediately before Gazillion, I was at well, I should say before this stint at Gazillion, because I've been here twice.
Right.
I was at BioWare Austin, where I was working on Star Wars: The Old Republic. Spent a little bit of time working with Tryon in actually a couple of years before Rift launched. And then when I lived in the UK, which is where I'm from, I worked with NCSoft on City of Heroes, Guild Wars, a bunch of other games in the mid-2000s. And then going even further back, I was at PlayStation. And there's even more if you go back into the Paleolithic period of my career. So yeah, there's been quite a few things, and but mostly sort of games and games community, I would say, from sort of 2001 onwards.
So I'd like to talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes, because you know, we usually talk to either PR people who have you know, larger firms, or the developers themselves. So it's really kind of interesting, I think, the community head type of thing. But let's go into a little bit of detail about Marvel Heroes first. For the few people out there who might not know anything about it, why don't you give people a very quick rundown, even though they should know by now?
Okay. Well, Marvel Heroes is, we like to say it's the Marvel MMO people have been waiting for. We know people have been waiting for a Marvel MMO for a long time. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's probably not what most people expect. The funny thing is that people have been waiting for a Marvel MMO for so long that the kind of the face of MMOs has changed fairly radically over that time period. And Marvel's fortunes have changed, of course, as well. They're a different company now, being owned by Disney. You know, the Marvel Universe doesn't really change that much. So what we've done is we've created an action RPG based on the Marvel Universe. But we've sort of taken the best of action RPGs and the best of MMOs, in our opinion, and we've kind of blended them together into one product. So it's an action RPG in a very traditional sense, in that it's got an isometric perspective, fixed 3D camera. You click to move around the world, you click to attack guys, and then we have additional attack buttons to activate, I think, up to 5-6 powers at once. Well, not at once, but, you know, off of individual keys.
Right.
And yeah, that's the way it works. The other big divergence from most MMOs is that you do not create your own character. Instead, you play as one of the Marvel heroes. We are going for 20 plus characters at launch, and then we certainly aim to put many, many more into the game over time. And yeah, we've kind of picked from the biggest and best names in the Marvel Universe, and then we've added a few slightly more obscure characters as well, to try and, you know, give it a bit of flavor too. But yeah, you get to play actually as one of the Marvel heroes, which is pretty exciting.
So how difficult is it to create? I mean, obviously you have David on board, and who has a little bit of experience making top-down isometric action RPGs. Mm-hmm. So how difficult was that, though, to change the scale? Because I'm not sure how people might picture the game. Are you going to see various parties of heroes running around, or are you only going to see you and your friends when you play? Tell people a little bit about that. And if you are going to see the larger overall group of people, how do you keep it as a smooth experience?
So about, you know, roughly speaking, I would say 75-80% of the game is happens in these large open areas, which we call public combat zones. Mm-hmm. PCZs are basically these large areas where dozens and dozens of people can run around at the same time. And they give you that kind of massively multiplayer social experience that, you know, we hope people want. That's really, you know, a big thing for us. It really is a big first for action RPGs. Most action RPGs, even ones that run online, basically allow you to run around in an instance, usually with yourself and maybe your other party members, but not usually with a lot of other people. So that's the big change that we've made. And we've had to adapt a lot in terms of Things like mob spawning and what we call event missions, which are the sort of large scale missions that a lot of people can take on at once. Overall mission scaling and that kind of thing. So there's been a lot of hard work that's gone into that. And yeah, you do run around and you will see other players, and you will see other players playing the same heroes as you. We obviously hope that, you know, in the very long term, there'll be a situation where, you know, even with dozens of players running around, everybody can be playing a different character. But in the early days, we expect, you know, you should expect to see other people. What we've done to sort of alleviate that is two things. I mean, one is we've allowed alternate costumes. So the primary way of changing your visual appearance is going to be through an alternate costume. There's going to be something like 100, 150 alternate costumes going into the game at launch. We've committed to having at least five per character. So there's a lot of different appearances that every character can take on. Those alternate costumes are either found, you know, in the game as random loot drops, or they can be purchased optionally from the in-game store. That was the other big thing I should have obviously mentioned when I talked about the overall basic premise of the game. It is free to play. So, alternate costumes are one way that we'll be dealing with it. And the other thing is that when you go into an instance, that's just for you and your party members. And the nice thing is you can switch between any hero that you have unlocked pretty much any time you want. As long as you're out of combat, you're not being hit, then you can sort of hit a button. And then, you know, the way that we have it is that your hero kind of, you know, gets a distress call and then leaps away and another hero comes in to, you know, replace them. So there's no logging out and logging in again. You know, you're instantly back in the action with another character of your choice. So, you know, you really can, you know, run around, mix and match. And, you know, if you don't like the fact that you're playing the Hulk and your friend wants to play the Hulk, then you can switch to your Iron Man or Spider-Man or whoever you might have, you know, might have on your roster. And if they don't have them, then they can, again, go and instantly purchase them in the in-game store if they wish. So, you know, it allows you to have that flexibility. And, of course, with an action RPG, you know, your character is always the center of the action. So while it might seem, you know, oh, I'm going to be confused because there's going to be two Wolverines running around, in reality it doesn't generally happen because your personal focal, you know, point of view is always really focused on that guy in the middle of the screen, you know. So generally speaking, it works out pretty well.
Now, that's interesting about the idea of being able to switch characters on the fly. Now, will those characters – obviously you won't keep the – items that you may have found for, you know, character specific upgrades, but in terms of your character's ability, if I've been playing as Spider-Man for 12-15 hours and I suddenly decide I'm going to play as Daredevil for a while,
yep,
am I going to have to kind of level him to get back to being not a detriment to the rest of my team, or are the heroes still going to be on the same tier, as it were?
No, that is a risk you'd have to take. You know, if you decide to switch to your level 1 Daredevil in, you know, a level 10 plus area, then you better be careful because it's going to be dangerous for you.
Okay.
We've put in a few other things to sort of help you balance that out. Like, you gain more experience while in a party. So if other party members can shield you, then, you know, you can certainly gain more experience while you play and level up a little bit faster. Mm-hmm. We also have consumables that do short-term experience boosts, which you can use if you like. And then the other thing is a thing called Story Warp, which lets you reset the campaign progress back to an earlier point. So you can go back through and complete those earlier missions with that character you picked up later on. You know, hopefully get some good loot and enjoy yourself when you're replaying. I mean, you know, the large public combat zones are randomized, which is exactly, you know, what you'd expect from an action RPG. So hopefully, you know, the replayable, you know, aspect of the game is there. You know, it doesn't feel like you're playing exactly the same zone every time. You don't have the entire zone's layout memorized. So, you know, there's definitely that element there to deal with.
So the characters wouldn't get different starting areas necessarily, but like you're saying, there's enough variability in the game itself that it wouldn't feel like, oh my god, now I have to go through all of this again with Scarlet Witch or whatever.
Yeah. No, we don't have different starting areas. Everybody goes through, you know, the same sort of tutorial area. I mean, it's something that we certainly considered at one point, but when we realized how many characters we were talking about and then how many, you know, potentially that we could do over time, it sort of became something that was a bit impractical, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, like I said, but there are. It sounds like there are ways in place, because I was speaking to friends today, and that was a concern they had about, you know, even with something like Diablo, which my friend loves. She said that was the biggest issue, that she played through with one character, started another, started a third, and then said, "Oh God, not again." So,
right. Yeah. I mean, the other thing, of course, is that, you know, which makes us a bit different from many action RPGs, is that we are looking at doing end game content. You know, which we hope will be replayable and, you know, enjoyable. You know, I mean, the thing about an action RPG, I mean, everyone comes to these things differently. We, as you said, it's free to play. You can pick one of the starter heroes at the beginning of the game, and you can play them all the way through to the end. If you're only in it for the story, if that's all you want to do, then that's fine. You can go through and you can play and enjoy yourself. We hope along the way that you enjoy the experience enough that you buy something. But for many action RPG players, the fun is, you know, going through with different characters, you know, finding out what it's like to play as that character, you know, trying different builds and that kind of thing. And for many of them, it's like, you know, trying to get the best loot and, you know, having the highest level items. And like we said, with Endgame, you know, we're going to put in very, very high level challenges for people. You know, we're going to give them the reason to come back and try and get, you know, the best loot and, you know, go through on the harder difficulty, sort of the higher difficulty areas. So, you know, there's some elements there, you know, to challenge you, hopefully, beyond that initial playthrough. But at the same time, if somebody, you know, plays through once and, you know, enjoys themselves, then that's fine by us.
Right. So an issue, obviously, with action RPGs is the latency involved because, you know, again, you need a fairly good degree of Twitch skill to get through an area, let's say. Mm-hmm. So how did you guys solve that, again, for such a massive scale, because you're starting to look at the possibility of all of these people on a server. So how were you able to handle that challenge of making sure that you can still, that your reflexes are still going to be what's important?
You know, I mean, it's, I guess it's really about a question of, you know, mob spawn and, mm-hmm. AI and that kind of thing, you know, it's pretty rare that you have a situation where there's a lot of heroes running around and either there's a shortage of mobs to fight or, you know, that the AI breaks down and they can't, you know, decide who to hit, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, of course, is that these being superheroes, we've given them some pretty, you know, major league attacks, you know, so we have, you know, a lot of AoE powers, a lot of explosive powers, you know, powers that do damage to the environment and that kind of thing. So, you know, we tend to, you know, we call them popcorn mobs for a reason. You know, you tend to chew your way through these guys pretty fast.
Right.
And then we have, you know, elite mobs that, you know, take a bit more time and effort to kill. And then bosses. Bosses tend to appear only in story instances. Which are only for you and anyone who might be in your party, and they're a bit more of a challenge. And then there is the open event mission stuff that we talked about. So mm-hmm. Those tend to be on a larger scale and in some cases can take a lot more time and energy and upwards of 10 or 15 people to take down.
So let's talk story for a second, because obviously it must have been fairly exciting working with Brian. So how did you guys get him on board and you know, and how did you decide what kind of story that you wanted to create for this type of epic adventure that you have planned?
So, basically, the funny story is that, I've been here at Gazillion twice. I was here from, 2009 to 2010. And when I was here the first time around, and it was, you know, before the project was even announced, we were talking about, you know, who could we potentially get as, like, a Marvel writer to craft the overall story. And the exec producer came to me and said, like, you know, I mean, I'm sure he got other people's opinions as well, but, you know, came to me and said, who would you suggest? And I gave him a short list of names, but the top of the list was Brian Bendis, because I was like, look, there's only really one guy who's kind of been the kind of chief creative architect for the Marvel Universe for mm-hmm. the better part of a decade. And I said, it's Brian. And I said, like, you know, he might be, you know, the guy to sort of, you know, the top choice, and he might be hard to get, but, you know, that's who we should start with. And, you know, as luck would have it, when we came back and talked to him, he had done previous work on other incarnations of Marvel MMOs. So he was pretty anxious to do it and very interested. So that was great for us, you know, and so things fell into place relatively fast. I mean, he would say himself that, you know, the difficulty with the story was trying to craft something big enough and epic enough that, you know, it could be seen as being like one of the biggest Marvel crossover team ups, you know, of all time kind of thing.
Right.
And that's why the story basically starts with Dr. Doom coming into possession of the Cosmic Cube. And then he is doing things with that cube, and he's on a quest to get all of the other kind of amazing artifacts in the Marvel Universe. He starts off looking for the tablet of Life and Time, which is, I think most frequently turned up in Spider-Man comics. And it's basically a tablet that literally has, you know, power over life and time. And there's a long storyline where you have to sort of resolve, you know, who has that, and it goes through the hands of various villains and stuff. And then the storyline kind of develops further and further until ultimately you will end up confronting Doom and finding out what his entire plan is. And along the way, you know, we try to work in homages to classic Marvel storylines as well. At various stages in development, we were leaning more or less towards the sort of homage thing. And we've kind of leaned a little bit away from it, but there's still some left in there. So, for example, the William Stryker storyline is heavily influenced by a storyline in Marvel Comics called Mutant Massacre, which happened in the early 80s, and a graphic novel called God Loves, Man Kills, which happens to be on my desk right now. So we took inspiration from there. But the cool thing is that I certainly hope in the future we'll be able to go back to other Marvel, you know, classic storylines and do something, you know, based on some of those, which will be pretty neat. But the story is definitely original and unique to the MMO and I think, you know, pretty epic. I think by the end of it, you know, people will have a feeling that they've really had a good, you know, exciting Marvel experience.
So just as a quick side note, was there any consternation among the group when the events of Superior Spider-Man started to play out? And, oh, we still have Peter. what do we do now? Or
No, not at all. We knew about Superior Spider-Man a considerable amount of time before the public did.
I'm sure.
So, no, we weren't. Actually, I got to read the – I was very proud to be able to read the story outline for it pretty early on. Directly from Dan Slott's typewriter.
Wow.
And I was extremely excited to see it because I'm a longtime Spider-Man fan, and I was really blown away by the audacity of it, and very excited about the possibilities. And that storyline is in no way finished. So we weren't worried. I mean, the thing about the game is that, you know, the tricky thing about an MMO is it's literally impossible to kind of pick an exact moment in, I mean, you could in theory go and say, you know, our game is the mainstream Marvel universe from, you know, January 1995.
Right? Right.
And then you could go and look at every comic and just look at the status quo of every character, but it wouldn't work, you know, because it's like, well, some people remember what it was like then and some people don't. And, you know, or we could have said, oh, it's the mainstream Marvel universe as of June 2013, you know, when we're launching. But that would have been tricky too, because quite frankly, while the editorial team at Marvel do plan, you know, quite a long way in advance, they don't plan as far in advance as we do, you know.
Right.
So 3 years ago, when we were, you know, doing the initial breaking of the story and stuff, it wasn't that they didn't know what, you know. I don't think Marvel Now was conceived, and you know, a lot of the crossovers and everything else that have happened between now and then weren't there. So that just really isn't very possible. You know, they can move and change continuity and status quo of characters way faster than we possibly can, and we would never be able to keep up. So what we kind of hope to do is sort of to pay homage to both classic Marvel in terms of you know, where you know, what everybody sort of hopefully remembers as being, you know, the classic moments of Marvel, and basically make sure that, you know, when they go into the game, most people think, oh, Venom is Eddie Brock, right? Venom is not Eddie Brock currently in the comics,
right.
but you know, most people think of you know, Venom as Eddie Brock. That was what was in the movies, and that's obviously what was in the comics for the longest time. Most people think that Spider-Man is Peter Parker and wears a red and blue suit, and you know, so on and so forth. So we're doing that, but at the same time, you know, we hope to do you know, nods and homages to those other characters, you know, in various different ways. You know, we've got, like, Iron Man has got both the movie armor suits and, you know, classic comic suits. You know, every character has got a selection of costumes from the, you know, the past and the present. And I think that's really cool because, you know, if you want to run around with your friends as, like, the classic era Avengers, then you can probably do it, you know. And over time, as we add characters, hopefully you'll be able to, you know, recreate teams and team ups that, you know, you read about in the comics, and really, you know, bring your own little Marvel fantasy to life, which is, I think, you know, the most awesome thing that we can do.
So if I may make a request, obviously you don't have to say yes or no for this, but a Miles Morales Spider-Man would be kind of cool to see that costume as well.
He's been discussed a number of times. The tricky thing about Miles is that he's not just a costume.
Right.
He has a couple of different powers that are different from any other version of Spider-Man.
Very true.
So that makes it that, you know, we want to be faithful. So, you know, we don't want to do a Miles Morales costume without having, you know, his little Venom touch thing and maybe his camouflage stuff. So he's a little bit trickier, but, you know, we've certainly we know who he is. And of course.
All right. So tell me about the challenge of recreating the overall visual style of the Marvel Universe in a game like this, because again, you're going to so many of the locations, and fans again certainly have an expectation of what the they know what these locations look like. Mm-hmm. So tell me about putting it into a 3D world that can be interacted with.
That was very, very challenging. I mean, I'm not the art guy, so I can't entirely speak to this, but I know that it took a very, very long period of time, you know, to lock a lot of this stuff down. Generally, again, it's, you know, we're trying to do a classic sort of fusion of stuff. So, for example, our Avengers Tower is probably mostly heavily influenced by the movies, Avengers in particular. But then we have things like the X-Mansion, which is kind of a blend of classic comics and then maybe a little bit of the Fox style as well, with their movie look. And of course, the difficult and the most tricky thing for us has been characters. We've kind of gone through various evolutions of characters. When we started, there was discussion of making them a lot more cartoon-like because of the fact that we were playing from this isometric view and we were going to be quite zoomed out. There was a discussion of, you know, well, maybe we should go with a more of a blocky, cartoony kind of a look so that it's easier to tell which character is which and so on and so forth. And we went through some revisions on that. And in the end, we pushed a little bit further towards the more realistic look, and that's kind of where we are now. It's still stylized, but it's a bit more realistic than it once was. And I think that was probably for the best. You know, overall, people, I think, respond to that pretty strongly. But it's still tricky because artists' interpretations of characters vary enormously over the years. I mean, I literally ended up in arguments with our artists about the number of webs that should be on Spider-Man's face. but you can pull up five different artists and count them and see five different, you know, answers on that. You know, but there are certain things that, you know, we know that fans expect, and in some cases we've responded to fan feedback on and changed things because, you know, it's not right or it's not, you know, what people expect it to be. So, you know, it's kind of varied in different ways. So yeah, you know, that's kind of how we've done things.
So creating the powers in game, obviously some of them are going to be a lot easier than others. There are other games that you could reference, movies and so on. So, you know, Captain America with throwing his shield, we've seen so many different versions of that and the different ways he can use his shield. Obviously you can put new powers in there, and I'm sure you guys have, but someone like Squirrel Girl, you know, it's not like there are too many cartoons. She certainly hasn't been in games. So tell me about trying to create, you know, enticing, exciting powers while animating her, you know, fighting style or some of the other lesser known characters.
I mean, obviously, you know, it's a case of our animators using their imagination. You know, we work extremely closely with Marvel. You know, we show them what we're doing and they see the game and then they make comments and they talk about, you know, how things should go. So, you know, we have a lot of conversations about that sort of stuff. And it's a collaborative effort between the artists, the animators, and then, of course, the designers and the guys who are coming up with the powers in the first place. Yeah, I mean, you know, it all just sort of comes together. The biggest arguments are usually over, you know, how does Captain America throw his shield or how does Wolverine swing his claws and that kind of thing. And when it comes to people like Squirrel Girl or Rocket Raccoon or whatever, it's a little easier in that people don't really know, you know, the way that they should necessarily move, but they've still got to feel good. And, you know, there's a very, I guess it's safe to say there's a very visceral feel to an action RPG in that, you know, whenever you click on an enemy and you attack them, you want to feel like, you know, it's doing something, that you're getting, you know, solid hits in, which has been something that's been, I think we have it, but, you know, it sometimes is difficult to get. And it's something as little as, you know, in a sort of a 3-second animation, you know, how many punches am I going to see? You know, how long are they going to take? You know, And that kind of thing is important. And, you know, do they look right? You know, like we did changes to Spider-Man recently to make him a bit more acrobatic. You know, I'm playing Daredevil right now, and now he has an attack, you know, animation that includes, you know, a sort of a couple of jumps and a kick and stuff, which is more right for the character. And that's the kind of thing that we're always kind of working on, you know, to make sure that it feels good, really.
And so let's switch gears and talk about the Founders Packs, since you've taken kind of a similar vein to what Cryptic Studios is doing with Neverwinter, in that people can opt in early and buy these Founders Packs with different tiers of heroes. So all the way from purchasing every single hero in costume, all mm-hmm. the way down to individual heroes packs, including the I just saw today, Captain America's premium pack was announced mm-hmm. this morning. Yep. Yep. So let's talk a little bit about the Founders Packs and how they'll work.
Well, I mean, you know, you summed it up there. You know, they're basically a really good deal, a discount deal, basically, on heroes and costumes pre-launch. We've got starter packs, which are at $20, which basically include a hero, a costume, some bonus currency, which you can play, you can spend in the final game, and then boosts, some sort of temporary boosts in there. Mm-hmm. Then we have premium packs, which generally include four heroes, two costumes apiece. And then again, more bonus currency and more boosts. And then the Ultimate Pack, which includes every hero in the game at launch, and also four post-launch heroes that we've announced, and every costume that's going to be purchasable in the game at launch, and a whole bunch of bonus currency and tons of boosts and a couple of permanent account level boosts. That also includes four exclusive costumes, which include the symbiote Spider-Man costume, which is the one that most people are very excited about. Iron Man's Mark 42 armor, which is in Iron Man 3, which is a month away now. Mm-hmm. The Hulk Maestro costume, which is pretty cool. It's kind of like Hulk with a big beard and looks kind of fun. And then Wolverine's Weapon X, which is his classic running around in the woods after he's been experimented on look.
Right.
And those four are exclusive to the Ultimate Pack. And also, you happen to get your name in the credits of the game, too. So, yeah, we've kind of gone, you know, for different levels. And we certainly seem to feel that they're all great value. And we seem to see that in the sales. You know, a lot of people have jumped on at every different level of the game. But none of the Founders Packs are mandatory by any means. You know, they're just, you know, there to allow people to get sort of early game. Oh, we also have early game access on all of these as well. So, you know, they let people get a head start on the game, but also, you know, get a really good discount, which I think most people, you know, in most cases, there's very few people who can say that there's only one Marvel character that they like. You know, most
right.
people have, you know, a number of Marvel characters that they're fans of. And, you know, they definitely, you know, want to play more than one of them in the game. So, you know, this way they're insured and they know that their heroes are going to be there at launch in their account, ready to go, you know, which is important to a lot of people.
So for those who, for whatever reason, either can't or are a little bit nervous about buying the ultimate pack there with all
sure.
of the characters.
Yep.
I mean, obviously it is a concern for some.
Yeah.
What are the other methods by which you can gain those heroes in the course of regular gameplay?
Basically, heroes drop as random loot off of boss mob characters. They are a little rarer than your average piece of loot. They're kind of the best loot in the game. But yeah, they drop as loot. And then, you know, we're probably not going to talk about this pre-launch, but
right.
I'm certain that immediately after launch, we'll have guides on the internet for, you know, which characters drop off of which bosses and so on and so forth. And people will be farming the game to figure that out. And yeah, that's basically how you get them. You know, they're there as random drops. I mean, we kind of went with that method because it's most in line with what action RPGs are really about, which is, you know, looting off of bosses and spending your time farming them and so on and so forth, which most people seem to appreciate. And they're always chasing after that elusive loot drop, you know, so, you know, getting that hero is really, you know, the best thing for you, I think, you know, as a free player. And then if at any time you decide that you'd rather just, you know, get the character and you know, you want to basically shortcut your time there, mm-hmm. then you can just go ahead and buy them. But none of the characters in the game, I mean, it's important to note that none of the characters, especially the starter heroes, none of them are inferior in any way.
Right.
You know, we haven't built the starter heroes to be a worse experience than playing with a paid hero. Mm. In fact, you know, it's kind of quite the opposite. Well, not the opposite, because that would be bad too. But you know, there's certainly a lot of fun to play. Like, I'm playing through as Daredevil right now, who's one of the starter heroes, and he's a lot of fun. You know, and you know, we've got Thing, Storm, Scarlet Witch, Hawkeye. I think that's it. No, I always forget one. Daredevil, Thing, Storm, Hawkeye, and Scarlet Witch. No, that is five.
That's five, yeah.
So, you know, you choose any of those five, and you can play through as long and, you know, as much as you want, you know, and never pay us a dime if you don't want to.
And it's a very interesting starting mix. You've got a really wide range of powers, from the mystical, from Scarlet Witch, to the, you know, the mm-hmm. powers of so... For people who might not be as familiar with some of the characters, I mean, because there are going to be gamers out there who aren't as familiar. Mm-hmm. And again, this is a personal question, because a friend of mine is running into the same thing. She knows, obviously, you know, her favorite character is Wolverine, so she'd be interested in the Wolverine pack. Mm-hmm. But as a gamer, you know, she has a very specific style of DPS that she likes to play when she plays an action hero, action RPG type game. So. Okay. How would a player who might not know the characters as well be able to determine what packs or a pack or packs would be right for them in terms of how a character is going to fit with their playstyle?
That's a good question. We'll be talking about it a little bit more before launch. I think we'll probably be doing some sort of guides towards some of these guys, so that people get a good general idea of how they play. I mean, obviously, if you're not familiar with the Marvel Universe at all, then it can be a little bit more tricky. All of them have pretty... I mean, one of the reasons we chose some of the characters we did was that three, maybe four... Scarlet Witch hasn't been in a movie, but Thing's been in a movie, Daredevil's been in a movie, Storm's been in a movie, and Hawkeye. So 4 out of 5 right. of those starter heroes have all been in movies in some way, so you get a general idea of you know, what they're about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, we'll be putting more information on the website to allow people to, you know, make those choices. What we've also tried to do, though, is to make sure that, you know, you can spec characters in different ways. So if you want to emphasize DPS, for example, over, you know, area effects attacks, for example, then you can do that. But yeah, in broad strokes, you know, they do play in different ways, and we'll definitely be making that point to people. And we certainly hope that people will go ahead and hopefully play in the closed beta as well. You know, we're inviting more people all the time. And we're doing, you know, some large scale events. We have a big event going on right now with IGN, for example, to allow a lot [S2] Right. [S1] Of people in to play the game.
So let's talk about loot again for a second, because we were talking about how the various heroes can be dropped as loot and various items for the characters. How is individual loot going to be handled? So you have –
the important thing to realize, which many people ask about, is that loot is tailored to you and also instanced to you.
Okay.
So whenever loot drops on the screen, it's always yours. No one else can pick it up. The exception is we have orbs, and some of those are shared amongst different players. So sometimes there's a bit of a mad rush to grab an orb before it disappears. But apart from that, generally speaking, loot is always yours and yours alone. And it's also tailored to you and to the character you're currently playing. So basically, if you're running around playing as Deadpool, then you're mostly going to get items that Deadpool can use. Every now and again, you're going to get items that other characters can use, which is, you know, a subtle encouragement to go off and potentially get those heroes.
Right.
But also, you know, if you're playing with more than one hero in your roster, you know, often it means that you've got something else that you can potentially use. And all the gear that you pick up has some use. You can obviously sell it back to vendors and get credits. Mm-hmm. But we also have a crafting system as well. You can donate your unused gear to vendors. We have weapon, armor, and crafting vendors. And as you do that, they themselves will level up and increase in rank. As they do that, they unlock, you know, more powerful tiers of gear for you to buy from them. So there's kind of always, you know, something that you can do there with your gear, whether you you need it or you don't.
Very nice. That's always, you know, it hasn't been a concern in many games lately, because most of them have gone to it's instanced loot rather than everyone fighting over whatever drops. So
yep. No, it was something that we did early on, you know, made a decision on early on, because David Brevik in particular was not a big fan of people running in and, you know, he's doing all the killing and somebody else is stealing all the stuff. And obviously, in a massively multiplayer environment, that's particularly bad. You know, you don't want a situation where, you know, you've just spent 5 minutes trying to beat down an event mission boss and then he finally falls and drops a load of cool loot. And then, you know, someone runs past and grabs the purple item on the ground. You know, that would not be cool. So we try and avoid that as best we can.
So what have you guys learned over the development time for this and now watching people play during the closed beta? What have you learned as developers, and what have you learned about the Marvel Universe?
Well, I mean, you know, you can never really stop learning about the Marvel Universe.
That's true.
bigger than anyone now. I mean, you know, we've learned a lot about Marvel, and we've learned a lot about the way that they do things and how protective they are of the IP, which is completely understandable. I guess, you know, the main thing that we've learned really is there's been a lot of learning lessons for these guys, even though many of them are veterans of action RPGs. There's been a lot of lessons for these guys about massively multiplayer environments and building these action RPG style zones for a lot of people at once. You know, we've been looking a lot at spawning rates. We've been looking a lot at difficulty levels. We want to keep that feeling of, like, you know, you can comfortably fight off a lot of mobs without dying all the time.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, it's still challenging enough that you have to be careful. You know, you've got to be careful on your health packs and making sure that you're using the right attacks. And basically you're playing well to make sure you get through this stuff. So I think that's probably the main thing that they've learned. And then also, you know, with a free-to-play environment, we're trying to make sure that we have a situation where the characters feel, you know, relatively balanced, that none of them feel grossly overpowered in comparison to others. And, you know, that kind of stuff has been an interesting thing. And last but not least, in terms of Marvel, I guess, a tricky thing for us has been making sure that all the characters still feel like they are Marvel characters and they're true to their origins. You know, Thor feels powerful and godlike, but at the same time, he's not massively overpowered in comparison to Daredevil, which is, you know, to a certain degree, of course, that is just a conceit for gameplay purposes.
Of course.
But at the same time, you know, when we don't have the luxury that comic writers do of saying, okay, when we write a team-up book where we have, you know, Daredevil and Thor on the same team, you know, Thor gets one sort of threat to deal with off in one corner of the comic while Daredevil is doing something else over here.
Right.
You know, so we have to kind of compensate for that. And we have, and we still think that, you know, Thor feels especially powerful. But, you know, it's equally pleasing for you to, you know, thwack someone on the head with a billy club.
So in this version, Squirrel Girl could definitely take Dr. Doom, and there won't be any debate whether it was a Doom pod or...
I was going to say, you know, that's on record as I think she's taken down Dr. Doom, Thanos, and Galactus at various times. So, yeah, she's pretty serious.
But people never are quite sure whether it happened or not. I know there's a lot of – in the community, no one's ever quite sure whether it was a Doombot or whether Thanos took a dive. So there's always...
I think people without a sense of humor like to debate that sort of stuff. But
yes, I agree with you.
But yeah, you know, she's a fun character, and, you know, we're going to make her a lot of fun to play.
So let's talk a little bit about it. So you started with 26 characters, and there are four more potential at the beginning right now. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, you picked, you know, the heavy hitters of the universe and then some of the alternate characters. But how did you decide who had to stay on the cutting room floor for now and who was going to be a character at launch?
It was, to be honest, the launch, not launch thing really ultimately came down to, you know, production schedule. You know,
right.
We had certain characters that we knew were going to take longer to do or just hadn't had as much work done on them. So they kind of got deprioritized.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is, to get the launch lineup right, the sort of, it was always going to be a mixture of various things. You know, popularity of heroes is important. Like, you know, we certainly didn't want to leave Spider-Man out of the launch lineup, for example.
Right. Of course.
But we also wanted to have a fairly good mix of, you know, different character styles, you know, different, frankly, you know, different sexes and different, you know,
species,
visuals. And yeah, I mean, you know, there's the thing is that people ask all the time, like, well, how do you determine what characters go into the game? And the answer is there's just a myriad of factors, and none of them, they don't have an equal weighting. You know,
right.
We may decide to press forward with a female obscure character like Squirrel Girl because we're kind of like, well, you know, the game feels light on obscure characters, or the game feels light on females, or it feels light on characters that use pets. You know, there's any number of reasons why we might add somebody to the game, and there's any number of reasons why we might not choose to add somebody. Like, you know, we've got a number of heavy hitting characters. For example, we've got Hulk, we've got Thing, we've got Colossus. We might not be in a rush to put, I don't know, Sasquatch in the game.
Right.
Because it's like, well, how different is he going to be from those other guys, you know? So I think at least initially we'll probably be trying to force ourselves to do characters that really round out and flesh out the roster. And then over time, you know, we can look at fan favorites and people that we know people want. We've had polls from day one on what people want to see, and we have a pretty good idea of who the fan favorites are. So, you know, we have, you know, long-term plans, and we're going to be looking at that kind of thing, but we're also going to be listening to what the community wants, because, you know, the question is going to be, well, do you want more characters? Do you want to, because if we give you another character, there's still the same game to play through, or do you want more content? Do you want more endgame missions? Do you want more systems? You know, there's going to be a lot of, hopefully, dialogue between us and the community about what they are interested in, and we're obviously going to see it in terms of what they vote with their wallet, right? You know, if everybody's buying characters, then I guess they want more characters.
Right.
Well, we'll, you know, we're looking at that stuff pretty carefully, and making our decisions based off of that.
So watch this space for future details about your favorite character if you don't see them in the lineup, is what you're saying.
Absolutely, yes.
So tell me about what's the proudest moment for you so far when because you get to watch people play the game, you're playing the game yourself. What part of it is the most satisfying for you when you get that feedback? Or what do you feel you've really, really, really nailed in terms of, yeah, we got this, we got this right?
I mean, it's tricky, you know, because, you know, we are always the ones who are very aware of all the faults and the problems and everything else with the game.
Right.
It's always nice to get good feedback, and it's great to meet people at conventions and stuff who are really excited about the game. But it's kind of always difficult to sort of gauge these things until, you know, they're in the game and they're playing and they're having a good time, and, you know, we've got a, you know, heavily populated server and stuff, so I'm not counting my chickens, you know, just yet. But I mean, we're comfortable, you know, well, I wouldn't say we're comfortable, that sounds like we're resting, but, you know, we're sort of pretty happy with the game so far. We still think we've got quite a way to go. I don't think it's ever going to be, it's obviously never going to be done, as any good MMO is, you know, they're never really finished. So, you know, we're going to be continuing to push forward.
So tell me briefly, let's switch gears for a second. Tell me briefly what it's like to be a community manager on an MMO project. There's so many people who want so many different things.
Yep.
How do you keep your sanity all day, every day?
Well, I mean, you know, you have to kind of just accept it to a certain degree, right?
Right.
You know that, you know, there are many people who want many different things, and your job in the most part, you know, with that kind of thing is to figure out, well, how many people want what, and, you know, how many people really want what they say they want, and how serious are they about it, you know, and that's a lot of what you've got to do. So I spend a lot of time doing that, you know, listening to people, you know, answering their questions, and then hopefully, you know, managing their expectations as best I can. With a product like this in particular, where you're talking about an established IP, an established universe, which has, you know, 50 plus years of history, people have very distinct ideas about what they think should and shouldn't go in the game. You know, in some cases they think we're crazy to put in people like Squirrel Girl or Rocket Raccoon. And in other cases, they think it's the best thing they've ever seen. So you've always got to accept that there's always going to be negativity, and there's always going to be positivity. You know, there's very rarely many issues where everybody is united and no one has a different opinion. You know, it generally tends to be that people, you know, everyone has an opinion, and, you know, everyone's entitled to share it. And all I ask is that, you know, they're, you know, understanding and positive and constructive in their criticism, which is all we really ask for.
Right. So, you know, keep it civil, folks, is the take home.
Well, I mean, you know, we're all fans of the characters, right? We're all fans of the Marvel Universe, and people, you know, understandably get upset if, you know, we do things wrong, or we seem to, you know, make their character, you know, if they feel that their character has been let down, then, you know, they're not going to be happy. But generally speaking, you know, we're doing okay, and we know where we need to improve some characters. So, you know, we're working to make sure that everybody's happy.
Most definitely. Well, Stephen Reed, I know you're a very busy person, so I just have a couple more questions for you, and then I will let you get back to all the other questions you need to answer. So,
yep.
When you guys are not working on the game itself, if you have any time on your own, what games inspire you guys? What games you know, what do you play to de-stress? What do you play to gain ideas? Or, you know, bouncing back and forth, bouncing ideas off of David with his experience with Diablo. You know, just talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, I'm not a designer, so I tend to mostly play games for the de-stress slash, you know, relax, you know, way of doing things. And I play, you know, just about anything. Like, I'm playing SimCity right now. I'm playing Tomb Raider as well. I enjoyed Far Cry 3 at the tail end of last year. I mean, the dev team plays every action RPG around, which is not surprising. They play a lot of League of Legends as well. They're big fans of that game. And obviously MMOs like World of Warcraft and many others. And also things like iOS games and that kind of thing. You know, there's very, you know, few places that you can't draw inspiration from. And I think we have a pretty wide and diverse, you know, range of games that get played.
Well, it sounds good. So why don't you tell people, obviously they can get the game at marvelheroes.com, but why don't we go over the Founders Pack one more time and just give people an idea of how they can get into the closed beta and the plans moving forward into launch.
Sure. Well, I mean, everything kind of is at marvelheroes.com. Right. The Founders Program is at founders.marvelheroes.com. The Founders Program right now, if you purchase a premium pack or an ultimate pack, you'll get invited to closed beta automatically. Well, I say automatically, it's actually sent out manually, but you will get an invite to closed beta.
Right.
We also, we have, you know, you can sign up and register an account for closed beta anytime you want. We are inviting people off that list. It is a big list, and it is going to, you know, take a long time to get through all those people. In fact, we may not get all of them in by launch, although we'll try. So that's another obvious way to do it. And the other thing to do is make sure you're following us on all sort of social media channels. So we're on Facebook, we're on YouTube, we're on Twitter. The Twitter one is a little odd. It's MMM Society, which stands for Massively Multiplayer Marvel Society, or Marvel Massively Multiplayer Society. I never decide which. You can follow us in all those places. We're also on Google+. And yeah, just look out, and you know, we try and update people fairly regularly, and you know, we do key giveaways and that kind of thing as well. In fact, I'm probably going to give you a key that you can put somewhere around your website or wherever you want to do it, and that can be used by a bunch of different people. So anyone who's listened to this, then you know, hopefully at the end of it, they'll go off and maybe try and get themselves a key.
That would be wonderful. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem at all.
So, Mr. Stephen Reed from Gazillion, thank you so much for being on the program this evening. The game, I said I haven't gotten to try it yet, but apparently that's going to change very soon. I really look forward to trying it. I've been intrigued by it for quite a long time. So thank you so much for coming on the program. And you know, in the future, when you have more stuff to announce, we would love to have you back on.
No problem at all.